This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode is brought to you by the Ready or Not Go-To Guides. If you're gearing up for the return to paid work, for postpartum, for breastfeeding and returning to work, or trying to navigate childcare, we have made guides just for you. Shop now at readyornot.au.
I got so depressed. I got so anxious. I wasn't sleeping. I was uncomfortable. I've seen people climb and climb and climb and they're everywhere and then they have a baby and then they disappear. Everyone around me, I thought, made pregnancy look easy. Well, if Luna makes you happy, quit it all. We glorify the village, but then we feel guilty when we call on. She's like a light and I have to be around her.
You know those people that you look at and think, if I had my time again, I would have liked my career to look a little more like theirs. For me, that person is Jessie Stevens. So perhaps it's a little embarrassing to admit all this, but I was always curious about if or when she'd embark on motherhood. I admire her thoughts and feelings and work so much that I wanted to know, what would making work look like for Jessie Stevens? So you can imagine that to be able to sit down and find out had me equal parts excited and nervous. And nervous I needn't be, because this incredibly successful podcaster, author and journalist is sort of just like you and me. She's been open about her history with mental illness and how that showed up during pregnancy. And she's spoken a lot about expecting the worst, but getting something better. In fact, I don't think better even cuts it. She's flat out loved motherhood in a way that the content she was served up during pregnancy didn't prepare her for. Here, we talk about how her definition of success has changed, the mythical career finish line that so many of us race against in preparation for motherhood, and the tension that exists between being absolutely thrilled to be a mum and still wanting, or perhaps even needing, to do paid work that lights us up. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the person I want to be when I grow up, Jessie Stevens.
Jessie Stevens, I am embarrassed. I think you're only about a year older than me. I'm not exactly sure. But I idolise you and your career in a way that I would think was quite embarrassing. But I know that being a best-selling author, being the host of one of the most popular podcasts going around, being on the project, I know that all those things can look better than they sometimes feel. So I want to know, when I say that to you, how do you feel?
I feel flattered, but also embarrassed. And like, perhaps I have projected an image that isn't entirely accurate. You know, I always like, I have friends who are like, oh, you're so busy. You know, yesterday you were in Melbourne and then you're doing this and then you're doing this tour. And I'm like, yeah, but all my work is performed and you see it. If you're like a teacher, or if you're, you know, I have a friend who works in mental health, I'm like, mate, you're working probably harder than I am. It's just that you don't see it on Instagram. So I think that I have to be careful of making that distinction. But it's funny that you would think that, because there's nothing planned about the way that my career has unfolded. It's just like, do the next interesting thing. And it feels like such chaos and a mixture between biting off more than I can chew. And then kind of, I'm at this the first time in maybe my whole career where I've gone, I want to spend more time with Luna. And then I look at my week and I'm like, am I doing enough? Like maybe I've wound it back too far, which I just think is probably working in motherhood where you just go too much or too little. But yeah, it's a lovely thing to say. And I think it, the way media is at the moment, you kind of take a gamble on like, will this podcast be a thing or not? And luckily for me, I rode a wave that no one could have predicted that podcasting would explode in the way it has.
Partly luck, but also a lot of talent, I would add. Do you think your relationship with success is changed from becoming a mum? I know that success has probably been a theme, even if you feel at odds with it at times. I think you can also agree that you did well in school. You've done very well since. Posey, please pipe down. And I'm interested to know, how do you feel about success now post-Luna?
It has entirely reframed my sense of success. I think because it's reframed my sense of time and the cost of running at something full pelt. So I was writing books, like I wrote my first book in 9 months and then I took a bit longer with my second, probably 2 years, 18 months, something like that, and loved it and I found that so rewarding, although very difficult. And now I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, so am I going to write the next one? And I go, the cost of that is a lot more obvious to me because time is going too quickly. Time has sped up and I'm just going, oh, I want to enjoy this at the same time. And success was also very achievement-based. And I remember speaking to someone in media once and him saying to me, you know, you are chasing this mirage. You're thinking that once the book is out and if the book sells this many copies and if I achieve blah, 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 or I sit on this panel or whatever, you're going to feel happiness. And I would end up in those situations going, there's still something missing. And it's because that's not where the happiness comes. It comes in the process. But also because fulfillment is about so many different areas of your life. You know, not everyone needs to have kids, but family and friends and relationships and experiences. And so, yeah, success is like I never would have thought that a day at home I would feel a sense of success or achievement. And now I do. They're some of my favorite days of the week.
Yeah. Talking about chasing, that's the perfect analogy to, I guess, paint a picture of how a lot of us live our lives through our 20s. So you graduate, you do well. What's next? Talk us through in the shortest way, not short actually, take as long as you want, but in a way that you can, that encapsulates a whole decade. What takes you from school to now?
7 years of mess. And it was a long time of like having no idea what I was going to do. So I went to uni, started psychology, failed statistics because I don't know how to add.
Oh my God, you're inside my brain. I was either going to do media or psych, and that's why I didn't do psych.
Oh, see, I wanted to do media and then I stuffed up my preferences. And so I accidentally did psych, stuffed that up, then went to do arts. So I did history and gender studies, ended up doing a master's degree, which I loved, which involved a thesis. And then I graduated and I had this moment of like, am I going to do the PhD thing or am I going, which, you know, you've got to have a topic that's going to sustain you for minimum 3 years. And then am I going to do the academic thing or what else? Because I'd never really thought of what I wanted to do. I didn't feel like it quite existed and like I didn't really know what it was. And I wasn't trained as a journalist. I didn't know how to write an article. So started doing this blog, which was kind of a comedy, like it was just silly little cultural commentary, I suppose. And I started doing it with Claire and then got an email one day. And I should say at this time I was working at a school in Western Sydney and I was teaching, doing an English program with kids who English was their second language. And I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't a long-term, wasn't what I wanted to do long-term. And so I think I'd applied for 80 jobs or something. I applied at every media organization, at NGOs, at every communications thing. Didn't even get a call back because I had no experience. Like, I wouldn't have hired me. And then I got an email. Claire and I got an email one day from Mia Friedman, who runs Mo Mia. And she just said, stumbled across your blog, really liked it. And we ended up doing like a Zoom call. And then we met at the offices and she offered sort of an internship. At this point, I was 25 with a master's degree and I had a few friends say to me, like, you know, you're coming in really at the bottom. But I was like, I just need my foot in the door. I think this is fun. I'm just going to follow my nose. That's what I do. Just like, what do I want to do tomorrow? I want to go into the office. And so, like, just did these jobs, like even sorting through video and tagging them, like really menial tasks, which I think were really important for me to understand how a company works. And then I would get an article published and then off we went. And then one day there was a space on Mum Mia Out Loud and they went, we think we need a sort of younger voice. I would have been 26, 27. And I got an opportunity. I was terrible, like lost my train of thought, didn't know how to do it, but just did it. And from there, you know, did the podcasting stuff and have just had a go at a bunch of other things, but definitely like, yeah, it wasn't this straight line of like, I want to do this. I definitely had moments in, especially in my mid-20s, going onto LinkedIn and being like, everyone's a manager, everyone has a team, look at these titles. And I don't even, other than working behind a bar, I have no credentials and no experience, because terrifying.
That is so nice to hear from someone like you, because so many people, even when I put up the Instagram story saying I was interviewing you, I think it was the most responses I've ever got saying, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And as me, that someone genuinely looks at you having the sort of career that I thought I would have. I'm sort of, you know, on my way, but it's not quite there, and that's okay. But it's nice to hear that it was more hodgepodge than it looks, because it looks bloody good on the outside.
Oh, and the podcasting thing, like the experience and the skills involved in producing your own podcast, like I'm in awe of that. I get on and I chat into a mic. I've always said it is the producers who are the stars and like who have more skills, and they're where like the feature is at. To have that, to produce your own project, I'm just in absolute awe of that.
I worked as a video producer at Cricket Australia before doing this, and even I had no idea the amount of work it would take. So I went into it incredibly naively. So I might have this wrong, and you can tell me if I do, but I'm thinking that maybe career was more, as you were starting to climb the ranks, that was more the headspace for you as opposed to motherhood. As a late 20, I'm imagining that you would go, go, go on your career. How did you feel about motherhood in the, let's say, years leading up to actually becoming a mum?
I always knew I wanted to be a mum because I love kids. I love babies. I come from a family, both my parents teachers, both my brothers work in early education. And I've realised this since having kids, the absolute privilege of having a family that values caring for children. So I always thought that was something that was important. Like raising children is one of the most rewarding, incredible, fun things you can do. So I certainly looked forward to that. But I've never been good at like time and planning and like a sense of when I ought to do things. And my partner is younger. And so a few people kind of hinted to me like, you know, when you start getting to the point where you want kids, especially if you want more than one, then, you know, just a man in his mid-20s, is he feeling ready for that? That didn't really bother me. Again, I don't think I'm capable of foresight. And then we got engaged and we kind of, I think this is what a lot of couples do, next year, next year, next year. Oh, well, I'm writing a book right now, so we'll do next year. And then that year comes, oh, well, I've got my career thing happening. And so I was 32 and we were engaged. And we accidentally fell pregnant. And when I looked at that pregnancy test, I knew immediately this is happening. Like, this is what's meant to happen. That doesn't mean it wasn't terrifying. And, you know, I'm sure it was terrifying for him too. But if it hadn't been a beautiful surprise, I think we would have kept putting it off for better or for worse. But it definitely wasn't something I think I was ever going to. I've had lots of friends say, if I hadn't had that happy surprise, I wouldn't have three kids right now. Like, yeah. I would have been terrified to consciously jump in.
So you see that pregnancy test, where does your mind go immediately? Is it the how on earth do I make this work with everything that's in the pipeline? Or is it just the broader sense of shit, in 9 months' time, I'm going to have a child in my arms?
Yeah. The second. Like, I just couldn't. It was like being in a dream. It was like maybe I never believed that my body would even be able to. It felt like I had sort of jumped on this train that was going in this direction. And I was like, what?
I did not expect this stop. I was on a different line.
Yes. And I didn't expect my year to look like this. And it was a mixture, you know, for the first trimester, I cried a lot. It was just overwhelmed. I felt really alone, which is weird because like I had Luca on everything, but the baby was growing in my body and I had a sense of no control. I don't know what this is going to look like. I don't know how to prepare for this. And what if I regret it? Like TikTok just decided to serve me all parental regret content. And it freaked me out. Like I was terrified. Terror was my almost immediate reaction.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you've had history with mental health challenges, which I think you were then quite nervous about how that might play out both in pregnancy and postpartum. How did that inform how you moved through pregnancy?
I was more scared of how it would unfold postpartum. I was really scared of postnatal depression. The rates are really high. If you have a history of postnatal depression, then, you know, it's more likely. Also, the gear shift for me, I thought would be a real shock. So I was kind of looking towards that going, okay, what can I do? And then out of nowhere, I was hit with like antenatal, like, you know, depression during pregnancy, which I didn't see coming. I didn't even know was a thing. I knew in the first trimester I was feeling weird because of all the hormones and stuff. And I thought, all right, that'll shift. And then second trimester, I did start to feel more myself. I felt healthier. I felt excited. I was finishing my book, like I had this burst of energy. And then it's like I thought I knew how the rest of the pregnancy was going to go. And then towards the end of my second trimester, all the wheels fell off. Like I got so depressed. I got so anxious. I wasn't sleeping. I was uncomfortable. And I didn't know it was anxiety and depression though. I just thought my life was shit and I felt like shit. And I think I was trying to keep up a pace and get all this stuff done before this imagined finish line. And my body was yelling at me, like, you can't do this. This isn't working. Stop it, stop it, stop it. And I was ignoring it and ignoring it. And that's really fracturing. Like, that's so bad for your soul to just ignore what your body is yelling at you. And I was really surprised at how hard I found pregnancy, because everyone around me, I thought, made pregnancy look easy. Like, woman at work is pregnant, entirely competent at a job, disappears, has a baby, comes back, is the same. Like, I didn't realize what she was going through sitting at her desk, what that the energy, like, the hardest thing I've ever done, pregnancy.
Yeah. There is this sense of deadline, and in most ways it's perceived. We know that our life does not all of a sudden end the day that baby comes. It might change, but it doesn't end. But I feel like a book deadline would feel different, because I can imagine that that really does feel like a deadline. How on earth are you doing the podcast, doing whatever else that you do as a journalist, which makes up a million different facets, and then writing a book?
Yeah. So I was writing a book, which I think was due. So I got married at 6 months pregnant, and I think it was due a bit after that. I was doing edits at maybe 36 weeks pregnant, 37. Oh,
just as you're starting to feel your worst.
Yes, just as I'm feeling my worst. I was traveling every week to Melbourne for the project. I was recording lots. And also, like, every job that came my way, I was like, money, money, money. Like, you need, because a part of what I do is freelancing.
Yeah.
I knew I wasn't, you know, you don't get mat leave for freelancing. So I was like, oh, I better take all these jobs because, you know, I'm never going to work again after my baby comes. I don't know what I thought. But the deadline, I also had this sense that my brain wasn't working properly, which I didn't want to say out loud because it feels really anti-feminist. And like I'm saying that women who are pregnant are incompetent, which is not what I think. But how I felt was brain fog, exhaustion. And like, if you don't finish this book by this deadline, you'll never finish it because you'll have this newborn and when are you going to do it? And I liked the idea of having finished something and then watching it go out into the world when I'm not able to work. Like, maybe that would be quite satisfying. So that was, it was really, really difficult, but in a way my headspace helped with the book because it was about mental health and there were passages I could write because I was in it, very in it.
And you say that you were accepting any opportunity that came your way, and part of that was a money thing. Mm. If you think back to that now, was part of it the, I don't know what my life will look like after this baby. So if I get as many connections, as many, I guess, achievements, my name out there as much as I can, that might help. Do you think that was part of it?
Yeah. So like, climb the ladder, prove yourself, prove yourself, prove yourself, so that you're on people's minds for jobs afterwards. Because I have this thing, and I realized how wrong I was, that I've seen people climb and climb and climb and they're everywhere and then they have a baby and then they disappear. And I'm like, oh my gosh, everywhere just forgets you and you lose all your opportunities and these people aren't going to want to work with me anymore because I've disappeared and I've fallen out of the rotation. What I have discovered since is that those women, 9 times out of 10, chose that. Like, they actually looked at their lives and made some calculations and went, I don't want to do that job anymore. And that's a relief because, yeah, I thought that, you know, oh my goodness, how not sad, but like how unfair that they lost that opportunity. Whereas now I'm like, oh, you just can't imagine how different your life looks, but
yeah,
how you want your life to look a little bit different. And you're going to make different choices because your priorities have shifted, which you can't prepare for.
I think a lot of us, maybe not so much during pregnancy, or maybe for a lot of people during pregnancy, but perhaps in the years leading up, because our career aspirations often collide with our maternal clock or when we want babies or whatever that looks like, the fact that these things collide at once can be quite hard in our minds, I think, because you don't want to be that person that steps into motherhood too much. It almost seems dirty in your 20s as a feminist. And now I realize how wrong that is. And my feminism is so much more informed by that matricentric feminism. Mm. And I am getting somewhere here, which is that I assume that maybe parts of that feel true to you. You then meet Luna. And I just feel like your world explodes in a million ways. I love the way you've talked about her on podcasts. Tell me about meeting her and how your worldview shifted.
I just couldn't. Like, I can't believe I even tried to think about it before she came out or tried to make a decision about maternity leave or work or anything like that. Like, you just can't. I just wish that during pregnancy I'd been like, don't think about it. You can't control it. Who knows what'll happen? And my experience is not everyone's experience. My twin sister had a very different birth, very different experience, and the weeks afterwards and stuff. But I've just, seeing Luna was the best moment of my life. I looked at her and went, oh my God, like, I can't believe that you're a person. I just remember looking at the eyes and being like, this is, I mean, I'm not like religious, but it was like looking at God, like just this.
I've said that too. I said to Hayden one day in the bath with Ray, it was like the most godly moment of my life, looking down to his face.
It's, and it sounds so ridiculous and like, it was like something cracked open, and from there, and it's weird because I don't know if my identity has changed. I hear people talk about that, but everything changed. My sense of meaning, my sense of everything got bigger and fuller and more fun and, you know, harder and a lot of other things too. But I cannot have prepared for how much I loved this person immediately and how I would do anything for time with her. So in the early days, it was almost simple. And like, I look back now, like she's just turned one and I, it's like, I kind of can't, it's a haze. It's a total haze, but beautiful. Like it just feels like a dream where it was this bubble and it was so close and so easy and so simple. But then I started going back to work in bits, which I enjoyed. I think that that was actually really good for my self-esteem and my understanding that my brain still worked, because it did still work. In fact, it worked way better than when I was pregnant. So I felt like myself again very quickly. But then came the pull of like all these jobs, all these opportunities, which you want to snatch up, and realizing what the cost was. And that, like, I've had moments where I've, you know, gone to a writer's festival or something and just it feels like my heart is being ripped in two. Like, I just want to be with her and I want to be in this place. Like, it's, that's been really, really difficult. But I know that if I don't, I think of her almost like a battery, like that she just recharges. When I'm with her, I am myself. I am recharged. I am like spiritually replenished. And if I have a week where I barely see her, I am just not, I'm not okay. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I've got to be around. She's like a light and I have to be around her.
Just a quick break to tell you about our Ready or Not go-to guides. Now, I may be biased, but I think when you refer back to something that you personally worked on, that's a pretty good sign that it is elite. I have been using the Breastfeeding and Returning to Work go-to guide as I return to the office. It was created with expert and lactation consultant Jolene Windus-Pay, and it is full to the brim with everything you need to know for breastfeeding and returning to work. Not only that, we've also made a postpartum and return to work planning guide and a childcare 101 guide. You can shop the guides individually for $29 each or the trio for $69 now at readyornot.au.
Your weeks look really different, I imagine, every week. But there's, as you say, a lot of travel. I saw you when you came down to sleepy Old Sorrento, which was an absolute delight. I live nearby. So I'm glad you came, and I'm sorry if it cost you too much, but thanks for coming. What does it feel like to, I guess, plan your week? And when we do think about cost, because I think about that a lot, like what's the emotional cost? What's the physical cost? What's the financial cost? What's the time cost? All of those costs. How do you weigh that up now?
I listened to, I don't know if it was an interview or I listened to the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, which he said some really interesting things, which is every time you say yes, you're saying yes to a debt you have to pay. And every time you're saying no, you're saying yes to what could happen that day.
Oh.
And he's definitely not talking about it in the context of kids, but he's probably talking about it in terms of productivity. But that week in Sorrento was a really pivotal one because I look at individual things and go, yeah, I want to do that. I want to do that. I want to do that. And then I see the week and I go, oh, I've stuffed this. Like I've really not thought this through. And there was a period there I remember I'd gone to Melbourne to record the project on the Friday. And then I came back at 11 p.m. that night, so after she was asleep. And then I came back because I wanted to spend Saturday morning with her before flying back to Melbourne to do Sorrento, which was on Sunday. And like I had organized that so badly, but I was so desperate to see her. And I, like my partner and I aren't perfect, but we try to speak to each other respectfully. And I just remember that Saturday I snapped at him and I was so, I just lost it. I lost it. And it was because I felt like a bad man. I felt like I just needed to be with her and needed to be holding her and I couldn't. It wasn't just those two things. It was, I was looking ahead and I had this Out Loud podcast tour where I was going to be doing traveling. She would have been maybe like 9 months old or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just thought, it's really hard when you look at your calendar to schedule in baby, but I realized the cost and what it does to me mentally when I'm not there enough. What enough is, I'm still negotiating.
The eternal question, I think. It's interesting you say that. I have been thinking to myself, I'm just distracted often. I am obsessed with paint work. I'm obsessed with my children. I still don't know how those things sit alongside each other. I'm always feeling guilty to Hayes, even if he doesn't ask for that guilt. He's just going about his day. He's fine. You do what you need to do. I'm here for you. But I feel all these things in my head and it is utter chaos, particularly at the moment.
It's like you feel like you haven't taken a deep breath.
Yeah.
You're letting everyone down and you're just, and when I remember my mum said when we were little that if she could have a superpower, it would be to be in two places at once. And I never got it. And now I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I totally get it. And then what's really hard, I was listening to a podcast recently about values and it was like living in line with your values. My values, I would put Luna above paid work any day of the week. That is what I value. But that's not how life works and it's not how paying bills works and it's also, I don't know if that's a recipe for entire happiness either. Like, because I've sat there and gone, well, if Luna makes you happy, quit it all. What does that look like? I don't want to do that. So
I know.
I feel really, I know that I am a better mum. Like I've had a really hard night and then I, you know, Luna, she's got family that looks after her and I walk in the door at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock and I'm a really good mum for those hours that I am with her and I go, phones down, emails are down, like, nah, I am just with her. So trying to get that right is a challenge. But, yeah, I don't know how to navigate those values because there are a lot of conflicting ones.
You were just totally inside my brain again. At my house because I freelance and I have a 6-month-old. This time, the first time around, I hadn't gone back to paid work yet because I took more of a traditional, worked full-time, took the mat leave type thing. This time I've had to go back to work because I have my own stuff and because government leave only lasts 5 months or whatever it is. And so it's now a freelance clusterfuck, really. And I'm distracted all the time. And I'm interested to know on your days that are maybe assigned to Luna, you're a freelancer Are you fully focused or is it a clusterfuck over there too?
See, I was finding that I was brewing a lot of resentment on those days, not towards Luna, but towards Luca, my husband, because he would go to work, go to the office. And even like last night, it was 6:30 and he's like, oh, still stuck in the office doing work. And I was like, any idea how much work I have? I have so much, but I don't get to sit there in quiet and get it done. And so it just gets pushed and pushed and pushed. So I've had to be more demanding. So for example, like on Friday, I've got family that will take Luna. And it's really hard when I know I don't have an office to go to. So I'm like, well, I'll be home anyway. I could be with Luna. No, get the work done so that you can be with Luna when you're with Luna.
Like be with a capital B. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like I just got to carve out time and respect my work enough to do that, because the worst days, the hardest days, are when I am doing both at once. It cannot be done. It is a recipe. I'm not there for her. She's whingy because I'm trying to do a little job. And there are jobs that are like well paying that I've had to go, it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm going to make less money and I'll lose that opportunity. And I'm going to live with that, because what it does to me on the days where I'm trying to do both is torture.
It's coming back to that cost analysis almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've spoken a lot about, speaking of those TikTok algorithms that we talked about earlier, you've spoken a lot about on podcasts that I've heard about what we're missing when we consume motherhood content. I want to know you what that is and why you think that is.
Well, it's funny because the content I consume is probably different to the content you consume, because the algorithm is
a genius
ruining the world. But I didn't get any positive. I didn't get anything positive. And the pendulum swung in a really critical way where it went, let's lift the lid and talk about how hard this is and what a day actually looks like. And from sleep to feeding to all of it, it doesn't look very good from the outside. Even if I was to share like a day, what it looked like, it doesn't look great, because whoever's consuming it doesn't love your baby. So it's like, that baby looks annoying and dirty.
Yeah.
But when you're in it, it's like when you try and retell a story and it's like, this isn't interesting or cute or funny or lovable because you don't love my baby. And what I've been sort of cognizant of is like not undermining like women or men who stay at home with babies full time. I just think have the most incredible job. It's not even like, oh, you're sacrificed. It's like, you must have so much fun. And I've just been shocked at the contrast between what I consumed and what my experience has been, which is I have just absolutely loved this. I can't imagine my life without Luna. I've like when I'm with her, like I laugh my head off. We have so much fun. I feel like myself. I feel like there are moments where I go, I'm definitely not meant to say this, but I go, oh, I'm good at this.
Yeah.
Like I have. It's given me self-esteem and self-worth that I wasn't expecting. And the relief of not being the center of my own universe has been very welcomed. Like, I love that it's her.
It's nice to think about something else, isn't it? Oh, not yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's refreshing. It
gives you perspective. And, you know, when you think of all the sacrifices you make, from sleep is the most obvious one, it's like you must really love them in order to make that sacrifice every day. So the thing I didn't see was how brilliant it is. And I wish I'd seen more of that I had so much to look forward to.
Self-esteem's an interesting one, because whether you look at it this way or not, you're a public figure that a lot of people admire and love consuming content from and love getting inside the brain of. So I imagine that a lot of people at Mamma Mia, especially perhaps those people that are starting day one, they look at Jessie Stevens across the room and they think, oh, wow, that's Jessie Stevens. She's about to go in and record whatever it is. I'm going to guess, because I can tell you're a humble person, that you don't see yourself that way, but others would. You say that you found this extra confidence instead of what you felt in pregnancy, which was a little bit foggy. How did that inform your return to work? Did it do anything to help you with your return to paid work? Feeling this, I don't want to say new sense of self, but you felt good, not imposter syndrome, for example.
Oh, yeah. And I felt like when I left to go on maternity leave, I owed everyone I worked with an apology. Like, I remember all the producers, I like bought them flowers being like, I'm so sorry, because I had really bad pregnancy insomnia. I would come in on no sleep. I'd cancel things at the last minute. I was incredibly unreliable. I would have just been a nightmare to work with. And to come back, I felt like I was myself again. And also, none of this is hard. Like, it's just a joy. Yeah. It's like, I recently did a flight back from Europe on my own with an 11-month-old. None of this is hard.
My chest quite genuinely feels a bit tighter hearing that.
It's the hardest thing I'll ever do. So you just go to work and you're like, oh, this is, you know, a hard thing to research for, or, oh, you feel a bit nervous or whatever. And I've had moments of feeling anxiety about work stuff, but it feels like you've got this present waiting for you at home. So definitely it's clarified what I do at work. I don't waste any time, and I shamelessly run out the door the second I can. Like, I'm not spending one more minute there than I have to.
Yeah.
If someone, you know, even you would sit there and maybe have a bit of a gossip or a whinge or whatever, and I'm like, look, I love a gossip, not going to have that cost me 5 minutes. Like, I'm just going to run back. So I feel like I'm a lot better to work with now that the baby's out. If I have another baby, people have to endure another pregnancy. I swear I'm going to have to, like, just buy them gifts every day, because I was just not my best
So you say that you could be aware enough to tell yourself that you're a good mum. When you return to it, could you also say, oh, I'm good at this too? I'm still good at this.
I think it was more, I can do it. Yes. Like, I never feel like I've nailed it. And that's made me wonder too, like, you know, with all little jobs and the mirage of going success and why aren't I feeling fulfilled? It's because every time I walk out of any job or any performance or any work, I just never feel like I did a good job. Like, I just never feel like I nailed it. And it's like, if you're going to carry that every day, then is this really what you should be doing? Like, is that how you want to live your life? Constantly feeling like you're falling short.
Yeah.
I think I'm working on sort of reconciling that and realizing that I don't think anyone, no one I know, finishes a day at work and thinks they nailed it.
Yeah.
So it's letting go of a bit of perfectionism, which you inevitably have to do with parenting, because there's no such thing. Yeah, that surprised me with parenting, because a psychologist I was seeing during pregnancy warned me a bit and said, you know, if you think you're going to get a report card that has A on it from parenting, you're not. And it's very, very true. And maybe it's the environment. Being at Mamma Mia for so many years with so many working mothers, it's like, I'm very much good enough.
Yeah.
Like, my standards are not through the roof, but I know what matters. And it's just like, when I have time and I can focus on her, even for little spurts, that's when I feel most satisfied, like I'm doing a good job.
Something I find hard to reconcile with on the flip side, that might not be your experience from what you're saying, or maybe there'll be a glimmer of what I say that you resonate with, is that I want so much to be here with Posey, who's nearly 6 months old. Second born seems to go quicker, I hate to say, because there's two of them. I know. I mean, whether that's true or not, obviously time is very much the same. So it's just my experience of it. But I want to be here with her so much, but I'd be lying if I didn't say I got bored in the sitting and playing. I want to be with her, but I also cannot, for example, not check my emails for 2 hours.
Yeah.
I will get distracted. How do you reconcile that? And do you experience that?
I know exactly what you mean. And I've found this hard, because I'll say to my husband, like, I just want to be with Luna, not enough time with Luna. And then it'll be a Saturday and we'll both be home. And I'll be like, okay, so I'm thinking I'll go to the gym. Like, I also have other things I want to do, and I could find it a little bit claustrophobic. I was just in the last 24 hours, I saw a thing on, I'm in all these ridiculous Facebook groups, and someone said, you know, I have a 2-month-old, and sometimes I put her in her bouncer for 15 minutes because I can't entertain her all the time. Am I a bad mother? Was essentially the question. And I was like, if you're a bad mother,
Jeez, if that's the scale,
I am all about independent play. Like, that is the idea that they need to get bored, and that it's like, Luna's brain doesn't work like my brain. She finds her book that she can't read really interesting. I don't, because it's boring. So I think I try and have, I was listening to How Other Dads Dad, Hamish Blake's podcast, and they talked a lot about intentionally going 15 minutes of play can go a long way. No one in all of history has played with their baby all day. That's not what the baby needs. It's not what the baby, I see it with Luna. I'm like, she doesn't want to play with me right now. Luna wants to go and explore other things. And in those instances, I will be listening to a podcast. Today when she was having breakfast, I was like, yeah, I'm going to sit down and do my emails. Like, because she's happy and entertained. So I think that we idealize going, oh, I'm going to have these romantic days. Oh, and I see it on like TikTok and Instagram now because my algorithm is like, I saw one last night that was someone who put up a jumping castle in their lounge room. And I was like, fuck, literally fuck off. That's not what anyone's
doing. This is fake. That's like AI, surely.
That's not true. Or they do like, they set up like water play. I'm like, I think I'll just give Luna a spoon. Yeah. Sometimes
I'm just
going to
look into her eyes. Yeah. That's enough today.
Give her a piece of foil.
Yeah.
See if she's interested. She probably won't be. Like, yeah, I'm just, if, as long as I'm around. But my mum, who had two sets of twins, never played with us. Yeah. And I didn't lose anything. It was, I actually think it's more important. My twin sister has a baby, a six-month-old. They're nearly at the age where they can kind of engage. That's better for her than hanging out with her mum.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I like. Or, you know, going for long walks and that kind of thing. So, yeah, definitely, I think because of our productivity mindset, we think that when we do spend time, it's like, must be quality. And often I'm like, nah, I think I'll just do the washing and throw the clean washing on her head. That's the game.
Yeah, that's the game today. Do you think some roundabout way we idealize perhaps the stay-at-home mum to behave that way all the time, to engage in this beautiful play, and we think that's how they live their lives. Do you think some of our guilt of entering into paid work attaches itself to that because we're working, we're not that mum, when really no one's that mum?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. And then when we have time, it's like, I better make this, you know, it's about quality time. It's got to be quality time. And that pressure, I've also found that on those weeks that I was like really busy and really, it's like I know what to do with sleep and with naps and, you know, getting her into a routine. But I would break all my rules because of my own guilt. And
100%. I know that feeling so well.
And that's not good for her. And so I kind of went, I need to put that guilt aside and just be consistent. And even though it goes quickly, it's like, yeah, 1 week, I do feel like I don't spend enough time with her, but I can make it up to her over the weekend. And also, I have a lot of like family, you know, we've got my mum and my mother-in-law and aunties. That's been coming to terms with the fact that time with them is as valuable as time with me has been such a relief, because I would leave, I would go, oh, she really likes it when you do this and do this, do that. But they work out better stuff that I wouldn't have even thought of. My brother looked after her yesterday for the first time on his own and brought a guitar and played a guitar for her. And I was like, that's better quality time and like probably better for her brain than what I could have done the whole day. So that's made me feel better too. It's like, you know, we glorify the village, but then we feel guilty when we call on them. But that's how they should be raised, with lots of people that love them and see lots of different things.
Speaking of your mother-in-law, you enter Mamma Mia not as partner to Luca, but you have talked about, and you've worked hard to get to where you are, disassociated from that. But you've talked about the privilege that does come from being the daughter-in-law of the boss. I want to know how that sits with you now. And are you able to see that, no, I did a lot of this, most of this, all of this on my own? How does that sit today, especially has having a baby changed any of that?
You know, it's funny. It's like, I think I've had to be very aware of that privilege and own it, because it exists and it still exists. And, you know, even at work with my, and Mia's not my boss, like I don't report to her, but if my baby's sick and I can't go to work that day, her granddaughter's sick. That's very different to someone else's baby being sick. And, you know, it's not like she has power in going, you can't stay home or you can stay home or whatever. But that makes a difference. I reckon that does totally make a difference. But yeah, it's funny. It's like, I know that those dynamics certainly influence how things feel. But I also know that when I started and when I got onto the podcast, I hadn't even met Luca. So it was, I got there on my own merits and I, you know, had never met anyone in media. I'd never been to an office before. Like, that was really hard to get my foot in the door and I sacrificed a lot to do it. And so I get quite defensive when other people use it as a criticism or like misrepresent
what it actually is.
Yeah, because it's like I haven't really, if anything, since being with Luca, whose mum and dad both started Mamma Mia, I've stepped back from Mamma Mia a little bit. So I do Mamma Mia Out Loud, which I've always done, and I do a few other podcasts on the network, and I'm an executive editor. But it's been important for me to do the project, to write my own books, because people don't give you a book deal because you're the, you know, daughter-in-law of Mia Friedman. You can't put that on the front cover. And I didn't have her endorse it, you know? Like, I needed to do my own things separate for my own sense of fairness, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be different if I was, like, the head of content or was doing things. I think that would be hard for the broader team. But I've had to carve out my own stuff that's separate from the enmeshment of family and career.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're aware of what you did on your own. Speaking of Mia and then also Holly, who I am a massive fangirl of, what did they teach you about motherhood as you were pregnant, starting to enter the sphere?
So much. And the big thing which I now recognise was them, not that they took offence to it, but they would push back on like, sorry, why do you think there's this finish line? Why are you in a rush? Why are you trying to get all this stuff done? Life exists on the other side of motherhood. And that would have felt a bit offensive because I'm sitting there with two people who have five kids between them and now I feel it. Like, I see people who are pregnant talk about these worries and I'm like, haven't I proven it's possible? But it's like, it's
what else can I do for you?
Yeah. It's like, it's not about other people. It's about our own insecurities and our own anxieties. But really practical advice, like, you know, Holly saying, get out of the house and go for a walk every day. The way they'd spoken about parenting, watching them do it alongside a career, hearing their own guilt at times and the push and pull that every parent feels has been a real gift, because there's not been moments with every emotion I've had. Even like, you know, when you've got a newborn and you're walking down the stairs and you see yourself falling and the newborn hitting its head, like those intrusive thoughts are just 1,000 times a day. I expected that. So because I have spent so much time with other mothers and read submissions and articles and edited stories, I've not been surprised by any of that, which has been a real gift. So I've not gone, oh, no, is it normal that right now I feel a bit frustrated or like I'm not feeling incredibly grateful?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, no, I totally expected that. Like that stuff is easy. It's, you know,
it like shed some of the loneliness or something.
Yeah. I think that's been the greatest gift.
Yeah. I could chat to you all day. I've only got two more questions. Then I'm going to let you go. So your grandma said on her deathbed that life is about the people that you meet. And you said that you'd forgotten that for a period of time. How does that sentiment sit with you today?
I think it is the most important thing and we forget it. And then grief reminds us of that. And I hate that. It's like then when someone in your life dies, the world does stop spinning. You don't go to work that day. You go to the funeral. You remember all of these things. You have regrets about what you said or you didn't say. And I'm weirdly obsessed, more so since I've had Luna, which apparently is a thing. I saw a psychologist about it. Obsessed with death, like my own death, not hers, mine.
Same, like, my mortality became this huge thing for me.
Yeah. So it's like I get into bed and I go, I don't think about it. Don't think about it. I can't die. It's like I'm obsessed with how it might happen, what happens after I die, like really, you know, get very into that. And what it's done has actually been, I think, kind of a good thing that it's given me perspective in terms of what matters. So when I was coming back from Europe recently, like I went to Ireland for a friend's wedding it was hard to go to Ireland with a one-year-old. It was hard to get the time off work, to get my partner have the time off work. There were parts of it that you go, it's just easier to stay at home.
Yeah.
Like, that's the stuff you relish. And you make all of these memories and my friendship with this person is really important. And so, yeah, it's those connections that I'm like, there's no point in burning yourself out so much that you're shit quality to everyone around you and you leave your worst self for, which I do all the time, but like for my friends and family, I want to leave enough energy to be the type of person I'm proud of.
Yeah. And to finish, if you could go back to newly pregnant Jessie Stevens and tell her one thing, what would it be?
You have no idea how good this is going to be. Like, this is going to be the best thing you've ever done, and relax. Like, the terror that I would feel, I think I was terrified about childbirth, terrified about postpartum, terrified that I would look around at my life and go, oh, I don't like this anymore. I've designed a life I now hate and I want to get out of. That was what I was scared of. I hadn't felt like that for 2 seconds. Like, I wish I had known how. Maybe that's why it's so great, though, because of the terror that the 9 months, you know, had before. And anyone who's pregnant, it's like, you've got no idea what you're capable of. If you think you're the type of person who doesn't survive on a lot of sleep, you go, oh, I'm actually pretty selfish. These are all thoughts I had. I'm pretty self-absorbed. I don't know if I can look after someone, put their needs before myself. You'll be shocked at what you're capable of. And with that comes like a lot of growth. And that's kind of what life is all about.
Beautiful way to end. Jessie, I think everyone that comes to this podcast episode knows where to find you because we've got a lot bigger following out there than I do. But in case they don't, where can people find you online?
Jessie Stevens 90, I think it is, on Instagram. I've tried TikTok. I'm terrible at it. I should do it more. Who knows what I am on that. And also the Twins Thoughts on Instagram, which is the one I do with my sister. We had a podcast called The Baby Bubble, which was a season about kind of the fourth trimester. So you can find some of that stuff there too.
Claire's next on my list. I know she's a little bit further down the line, or the opposite of that, actually. She's about 6 months behind you, isn't she?
Similar. When was Posey born?
She was born in January.
Okay. Matilda was the 21st of December. So she's a little bit older. But
well, I'll have to get her next if she's happy to come on.
Yeah, she would love to. Matilda is just I feel like I have two babies. I feel so spoiled because I've just got mine. And I love the age. I love the age of the first sounds and
the smiles.
Wearing them. And it's just so special. So
good.
Gosh, she's just the best.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.